And that was Aiden Sutherland with Hey Politician Man. Before that, Wolf Saga, Keep Dancing. And starting that off was Ray Zaragoza with Warrior. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more wonderful programming from KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions, Nate and James share what makes the hobby so vibrant through banter and interviews with local members of the hobby game scene. And if we can inspire a few listeners to join us around the table, all the better. More people to play with. Winner's Bias. You don't have to win to have fun, but it doesn't hurt. The first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
Talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. As we know, there was this bill that got passed. It was signed into law on July 4th. It was dubbed the Big Beautiful Bill, quotations around the word beautiful as far as I'm concerned. It was an insidious and very ugly piece of legislation, one that that's going to have reverberating effects for years to come. And I wanted to show, or at least bring to people's attention, how it's hitting folks on the ground. Part of this big bill was looking at massive defunding of Medicaid. And not only is there massive defunding of Medicaid, there's also folks puffing their chest and saying anybody who gets Medicaid needs to be out there working. My personal experience with Medicaid is that the two groups of people that I saw needing it most was one, the elders in my family who had worked all their lives and were no longer in a position to work. The other was, you know, people who were young, you know, my sister having chronic asthma, et cetera, et cetera. We needed those things. We also knew that if you made over a certain amount of money, you weren't eligible for that. So having a job was discouraged. But now they want to change the rules, and I don't think it's going to fit neatly into a box. Among this defunding, I wanted to see how it was impacting some of our community organizations, and one of them that's been a stellar organization and a mainstay in the Oakland community is Roots Community Health Center. And joining us is Dr. Noha Abeleta, who is with us this afternoon. So welcome to the show. It's been a minute, but you're no stranger to these types of fights. I remember during COVID, you were one of the people sitting in the White House having to blow up the spot. So I'm not sure if you were shocked by what was coming down the pipe, because you kind of seen this movie before with this president.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to say that I wasn't at all surprised. I think every time I think we couldn't go lower or further backwards, I get a little bit of a new surprise. It seems like every day there's something new. So this is this bill passing is definitely a huge disappointment, and is definitely going to be sending us backwards. It's actually, you know, giving me like flashbacks of before the Affordable Care Act, and I think it will be even worse than that.
What was going on before the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare?
Yeah, so I think, you know, for us, this was, I mean, Roots was actually founded in 2008, so before the Affordable Care Act, and particularly the part of the Affordable Care Act that expanded Medicaid. So what we saw was that, like a lot of benefits in this country, it was really focused on women and children. And so you had a sort of systematic baked-in way in which families were not uplifted, and in which men were essentially excluded from very basic rights and very basic benefits. And so what we saw was that men, low-income men, simply could not get outpatient regular care and would have to wait until things were bad enough to go to the emergency room or go to the hospital. And it wasn't uncommon for me to hear from patients, yeah, the only place that has a chart on me, you know, the only place I can get ongoing care is prison.
Wow.
And that was the reality, because prison in this country is actually the only place you're guaranteed health care.
So you all were filling a void in a very big way, and got to see up close and personal the type of need the community had. Were you able to fill the gaps? Was the current administration, like the Obama administration, looking and saying, you know what, organizations like Roots need to be enhanced, need to be underwritten, need to be emulated as an example of what happens when a community steps in and fills the void?
Well, probably not as much as we would like, but there's no question that expanding Medicaid was an absolute game changer. We, you know, it didn't change things overnight or automatically, because we all know that, you know, first off, folks were skeptical, you know, to even get on the coverage. But we did a lot of work to have, you know, and our staff is really reflective of our community. And we were enrolling folks and bringing them in. And I have to tell you that it was really difficult at the beginning, because you would have people who had been putting off care because they couldn't access outpatient care. And so at the beginning, I just remember people coming in where it's like, I wish we would have seen you a year ago, 6 months ago, you know, things are more advanced. And I really worry that we're going back to that time. But we were able to, you know, go out. Really what we were looking at initially was, hey, why do we have these huge disparities? Like, why does a Black man in East Oakland, you know, have a 15-year shorter life expectancy than maybe someone up the hill, you know, just a few miles? So that's what we were really looking at. And of course, a big part of that was healthcare access. That's not the only piece of it. And so we really set out to not only provide that access, but also to address all of the other things that impact folks' health. And we know a big part of that is barriers to access to opportunities and to jobs and to employment. So we actually, I mean, as a health center, we're a little bit unique in that from day one, we've said, hey, if we want folks to be able to experience good health, we need to make sure that they have access to opportunities and to work. So we're aligned with that idea, right, that we want people to be on a path to self-sustainability. But we've seen very up close and personal how there are a number of barriers that have still not been addressed and are not being addressed. And if you don't address those, then using someone's health care as some kind of coercion, it just doesn't work. It's already been shown to not work.
When you say coercion, you mean coercion, like if you want health care, then go out there. And basically what they were saying is go pick lettuce, because we're going to be deporting the people that are picking lettuce now. So they were literally saying, like, the folks who want Medicare, they're going to have to go out there and do work. That's the type of work, which seems to be crazy on a number of fronts, because we're talking about something that's in an urban center, and the need for communities like centers like Roots is oftentimes where we're concentrated. There's definitely a need in rural places, but what happens when you're living in East Oakland? What farm are you going to be working on to pick grapes and lettuce?
Well, and where's the legislation that says, if someone has a misdemeanor or a felony, you got to give them, a fair opportunity? I mean, you can commit, felonies and be the president, but you can't work in a lot of employers in Oakland and beyond. And so we if we're not removing barriers to employment, then all of this is pretty much lip service. And we have, our head of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Dr. Oz, saying you got to get out there and prove you matter. In order to get something that really, I believe should be a basic right in a country this wealthy. In Oakland, we have thousands of people sleeping on the streets every night, and to say that they can't get their basic health coverage for outpatient treatment unless they are working 80 hours a month, we know that's not gonna be effective, and all we're doing is really taking away their coverage, and the likelihood that that's gonna increase the workforce is pretty minimal.
Right. There's a couple of things that's also swirling. Prior to this bill being passed, we saw the defunding of medical research, cancer in particular, and the discounting of work that people like yourselves do. You're a doctor, you've earned your stripes, you've been out in these streets literally putting in work, and then you get somebody like RFK coming in and saying, yeah, all that stuff is not good, is not great, let's defund it, let's undermine it, all that sort of stuff. So you kind of had that battle, and I don't know what that was like for physicians like yourselves and organizations like the one you're heading. Then it's compounded with, the Medicaid defunding. So it seems like, in my mind, there's two battle fronts that you're on. Can you look at that first one, or does all this defunding of Medicaid, of medical research and undermining the type of things that you and others have been doing, has that been a battle that you've had to already wrestle with?
Well, yeah, there's no question that this just been one sort of manufactured crisis after another, for these past 6 months or so. And it's all very worrisome. And I think it does highlight the importance of, those community physicians and resources for care where there's trust, because we already have an established relationship. But for a lot of people, if you don't have someone you trust that you can talk to about these things, and all you're getting is this anti-science rhetoric that really seems designed to kind of dumb down the population in general, then you're kind of out there on your own and struggling to get, good, credible information, and that's getting more and more difficult. So I think the misinformation and disinformation has not slowed down at all, and that's going to continue to be a battle that we'll continue to fight. I think the, defunding, as you're saying, and the, some of the just undermining in general, sort of trust in some of the public health measures that we know work, and the data and the evidence do not lie. And instead of looking at data and evidence, we have a lot of innuendo and just rhetoric and vibes. And all of that is just working to reduce access, because at the end of the day, if you don't have, a CDC, advisory committee that's going to approve vaccines, for example, then insurance companies don't have to pay for them, for example. So we don't know how all these things exactly are going to play out, But the pendulum is swinging back very violently at this point from the things that we put in place during the public health emergency, which is sad because I know a lot of us were really hopeful that, you know, wow, look at what it could look like if we gave everybody access to, you know, the vaccines they needed or the tests they needed, or look at how great it would be if we didn't require everyone to go through, you know, administrative hoops of fire all the time to get their Medi-Cal redetermined, right? We had the continuous coverage, which was an absolute blessing. And we had hoped that, you know, many of those things could stay in place or that we would build upon them. But we've not only dismantled all those things, but we're actually actively going backwards from all those things.
Dr. Noha, let me ask you this. What do you anticipate, or what are you seeing with these cuts? What's it going to be like for you guys at Roots? Is it increased people coming? Is it a shortage of staff on your behalf? Are people going to be showing up with more acute conditions that you simply just are not equipped to help? It seems like, from my mind, as these cuts are happening, resources are going to be redirected. I think you mentioned prison. So yeah, if you're incarcerated or maybe in a detention camp, we'll put money towards there. I don't know if they will actually utilize that money in an effective way, but they will say money is in the detention camps. That's where people can get their health. In the meantime, they'll just use, you know, Roots and other operations like it as a dumping ground. Like, go to Roots. They'll handle it. They'll take care of your problem, but you won't have the resources. Am I right in that assessment, or are there some missing pieces in understanding this?
Well, I think we're still really assessing what this impact is going to be like. I think it puts a lot more pressure on us. It puts a lot more pressure on the city, the county, the state. And we're definitely looking to them to see how we're going to pull together and mitigate some of this. There's a lot of questions, I would say. And so, you know, like, we know that rates will likely be affected in the near term based upon this. And our Medi-Cal rates here in California are low. They're among the lowest already. And so that's concerning, because what will happen is that you'll have, you know, a lot of practices may see some Medi-Cal, but they may choose to see none, or some that see a lot may choose to see less because the math just doesn't work out. So that will put more pressure on organizations like us, who, that is our mission, and that is who we see. And we're already seeing the percentage of our patients that have Medi-Cal is increasing. Now, if they lose their Medi-Cal, then that, you know, that means that they are going to have difficulty accessing outpatient care, which means that chronic diseases, things that we can treat simply, you know, in an outpatient practice, like diabetes, high blood pressure, asthma, those kind of things will start to be treated in the emergency rooms again. So we're definitely concerned about pressure on our hospitals and on our emergency rooms, which would then impede access for everybody, right? Not just people who have or don't have Medi-Cal. It's gonna create access challenges for everyone. And so I think for us, one of the big concerns is around the work requirement. We have a little bit of time before that's supposed to take effect, 2027. So I'm really hoping that there will be a concerted pushback to this, because the implementation of it is very unclear to me how this is going to work. If you have to go and prove that you are working in order to have your benefits stay in effect, or to renew them or redetermine them, I'm just wondering who's going to do that, because, you know, our social services agencies are already overburdened as well. I'm not seeing increasing resources going into that direction. Also, we know that if you are somebody who's disabled, it could take years to get disability benefits. So just saying, right, well, oh, if you're disabled, just go get disability. Well, it's not that simple. And for a lot of people that we see, people don't want to go that route if they don't have to. So if they can work a little bit when they can, but that doesn't seem like it's going to be good enough as far as these new regulations that are coming in order to keep your Medi-Cal. And lastly, I would say we really are curious, how is this, you know, community service or volunteerism supposed to work? Because at least in the state of California, this seems in direct contradiction to our labor laws. So you can't tell somebody you have to volunteer 80 hours a month in order to get health care. That's not actually volunteering. And so we wouldn't be able to host something like that unless something changes with, you know, with labor laws or something like that. So I think we have a lot of questions about how this is actually supposed to be implemented and how we're going to add administrative burden onto something that is already actually quite burdensome as it is.
Dr. Noha, a lot of people for a very long time have walked around and said we need to do for self. I hear people utter the refrain, we're on our own. We have no friends, that type of rhetoric. Okay, I'm gonna say that is true. So here we have an organization like Roots. We have people that are from the community, folks who we can trust, who do their due diligence. And since we're not going to be dependent upon these other outlets, what is the responsibility for the community to make sure that come hell or high water, you know, through, you know, sleet or snow or whatever the conditions, whatever way the political winds is going, Roots is going to be there for the people. What do we as a community need to be doing to make sure that you all are able to not only survive but thrive in these political times?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I mean, one thing I would say is we have to pull together. This is not a time for us to just throw up our hands, because I think we are always going to be stronger together. One of the things that we're working on right now is standing up a freestanding Young People's Wellness Center in Deep East Oakland for our young people, because we're very concerned about how all of this is impacting them. Because, you know, if we as adults think things are looking bleak, you know, after, you know, really what has been a very challenging several years now, what about our young people coming up in this? And so that is something that that makes us feel hopeful. And so working with our young people and creating a space that is really for them and by them in East Oakland is something that if folks are interested in supporting and helping, please do visit us at rootscommunityhealth.org, and you can find out all about the Young People's Wellness Center or just any of our programs and services. And definitely if folks need us, if folks need medical care, behavioral health care, you know, navigation through services, benefits enrollment, or have questions about your benefits or need help staying on your benefits now, this is a good time to get all those things in order and just kind of stay on top of it. And so we're always here for that, both in East Oakland and in San Jose. And I would say, stay tapped in, you know, don't tune out, because I think this is what they're banking on, right? Is like, people stop caring. People say, well, I don't know if, you know, I'd really need vaccines or not, or I don't know if we really need, you know, is HIV really a thing? I mean, these are the kind of thing, the rhetoric that's coming out of the highest levels of government. And I think it's really imperative that we stay connected to data and science and the truth. And so we're still doing our Tuesday briefing every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Roots Empowers, you know, on all the social media channels and on YouTube. And that's where we just kind of in under 30 minutes kind of give it to you straight. This is what's happening in health and public health. This is our best thinking right now, because we have to stay on top of it. I think this is not a time for complacency.
Real talk. And for those who have means, how can they support you?
Well,
if people can spend if people can spend $1 million to go to a white Diddy party, as they were doing before this trial, maybe some of that can be put, you know, to make sure that there's a vibrant community health center, because that's going to be the need. And again, I emphasize, people said, we have no friends, we're on our own. So here's the opportunity to be on our own and make sure our own is uplifted.
Well, thank you for putting that in the universe, David D. Anybody got those type of resources, please do. You can email us, admin@rootscommunityhealth.org. You can also go to the website and have a way to make donations there. But certainly reach out to us. And we need all those partnerships. We need to stay stronger and as stable as possible, because we really have you know, become an anchor within the community in East Oakland. And it's not just for healthcare, it's for work and for all the things that we know will help people on a path to, you know, thriving. And that is what we want to see. So we can use all the partnership, including, you know, people's resources, connections, volunteerism, thought partnership, all of those things we welcome.
Real talk, Dr. Noha Obaleta, thank you for joining us this afternoon. This is one of the places that will be impacted. We're talking about locally. How does these budget cuts, how does it trickle down? Well, there's going to be a trickle down, and these are the institutions that have been front line for us, and we're going to have to make sure we not only circle the wagon, but we uplift them and in a different type of partnership. In other words, just don't take you all for granted, but to be intentional about breaking bread with you. So thank you for joining us. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio.
The rain falls hard. An old man sleeps, no roof, no guard. Under the freeway, lost in cold. Somebody's father left out alone. What mother could picture this sight? Her child forgotten, lost to the night. $1 billion homes lying the way, but for him there's no shelter, no place to stay. What happens to us when we fall from grace?
Fall from grace.
When the world turns its back. Why do the evil people never ever die? While the good ones suffer and ask the sky, is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive? As this old man shivers in the dead of night, rich people passing their lives full of life, they turn a blind eye, too busy to care, while he's left to freeze in the cold, cold air. Why do the evil people never ever die? While the good ones suffer and ask the sky, is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive? Why do evil people keep on living? Why so many who are good keep forgiving? One day, someday, things got to change. We can't keep suffering. We can't remain the same.
Hey, hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, radio, south, man. Conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo, it's
a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We've been talking to a number of artists and organizations, and at a time when diversity is being threatened and being maligned and outlawed, damn near, definitely defunded, at a time when cultural expression is something that is seen as a threat. People who are participating in cultural activities that really focus on their background and their histories and their individual and collective stories have great weight. It's now seen, I think, something that we should not be taking for granted, something that is important. And so we've been pretty intentional about looking at some of these things that are going on. One of them is a play that people are happy to report got extended for another week. It is called Aslan. And joining me is somebody who's no stranger to our airwaves. Many of us know him as One Way, the DJ, but, you know, Juan Amador, he's an actor's actor. You know, he's like a series actor and got busy in this play yesterday, man. I didn't even know you was in it when I went to go see it. And I was like, what's Juan doing there? Not only is he there, but he's playing like two or three roles. You're a pretty good actor, son. You know?
Oh, man. Thank you, man. It's an honor.
Yeah, I was like, man, he don't even sound like the guy that we're talking to that I see all the time, man. I was like, you had two different personas, you know?
Yes, so, yeah.
You know, doing your thing. Couple of things. One, talk about this play. You know, I started off by talking about cultural relevancy and the whole nine, and I think on the surface this would be something that the Stephen Millers of the world would say, no, we can't allow this to happen, and let's sign some sort of law so it could be outlawed, because it's not centering whiteness, it's centering folks whose history has been erased. Aslan and the whole nine. So talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, man, it's a really beautiful play, Aslan, written by the great Luis Alfaro. And I think it's a great point that you bring up, because so much of our culture, of everything else, of brown and black culture, is trying to be literally erased, erased from who you see outside, erased from the history books. So it's really interesting that this play came about at the time it did, because when you think about the concept of Aslan, it's this kind of mythical place that we look towards. And that's the name of the main character, who was recently released from being incarcerated. And he's trying to kind of reconnect and rediscover his family, who all happen to be connected to these Aztec gods and mythology. And there's a great line in there. It's like, you know, you have 22 generations that are behind you in this. And on the surface, it's a story about family, but on a greater scale, It's really talking about everything that's happening right now and trying to retell our story.
Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of things. One, with the information being banned in books, defunded out of classrooms, and even big battle around ethnic studies in San Francisco, where y'all are from, you know, plays in San Francisco.
Yep.
Is there an added weight to not only doing these type of plays, but making sure it gets right and maybe even extending, you know, the type of activity that you all as actors and playwrights and the whole nine. In other words, it's like I'm watching this play and I'm like, huh, this yeah. this might have to take the place of the classroom that just got rid of and yeah, the studies. Yeah. You know, the yeah. whole different responsibility.
Yeah, it really is. We were a couple weeks ago, we were in rehearsal, and it was, I think, the day of the No Kings March. And a lot of us were feeling a little guilty, disappointed that we weren't on the streets that day because of everything happening, obviously. And our director, he's like, you know, I know you guys want to be out there right now, but, you know, also what we're doing is a different form of protest and also really necessary for what it is. And yeah, man, I think we don't think about it as much, but then when you kind of scope out and you see who's coming to the shows, you see young folks, you see people who are looking for that other place of history, who are looking to see themselves on a screen or a stage, it holds a bigger weight. And yeah, man, I think we're all happy to be a part of that and be help share.
Do you yourself have an academic background where it's rooted in that history? And this is this is part of the responsibility now. It's more than that, because you become the spokesperson. Now I'm going to be asking you, like, what is Ocelot? Like, and you got to be able to answer that now. It ain't just like, I'm an actor, I don't know. But what's the history, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually am a San Francisco State Gator myself. And I went to school for broadcasting, but I also went to school for what at the time was La Raza Studies. So coincidentally, here we are on the radio talking about it. I think it's our duty to go deeper. And I think we know that going into it, though, because this isn't just with all respect to all my fellow actors, this isn't a play that is on tour, that's some popular thing off Broadway. We're making brand new theater that is being kind of ripped from the headlines. And we know, we love everyone coming, but we're doing it for our people, man, because it's so important right now. So yeah, we're learning as we go, and there's a level of teaching to that, and there's a level of passing down, which I think is kind of what's happening in the story.
You know, I mentioned that these plays in these type of cultural gatherings have added weight. And so we're seeing a big shout out to Ryan Nicole, you know, fellow musician, and her whole crew that did Co-Founders, which I didn't even get a chance to see because it's sold out every night. And then we have like our Cat Brooks and, you know, the Lower Bottom Players and all the stuff that they do. They seem to have plays coming in and out. And then last night I ran into people that's like, oh yeah, we got Oakland Theater of the Arts. And I mean, there was a lot of people that are doing these things. One, what's the community like with the fellow actors and actresses and people like that? Some of the names I mentioned that I think we both know, you know, do you all chop it up behind the scenes? And then two, is it fair to say that there's some sort of renaissance going on to see all these people getting busy seemingly at the same time?
Yeah. I got to send a big shout out to Ryan Nicole and Co-Founders. I wanted to go too. I couldn't get a ticket. And big shout out to Cat Brooks, who's doing amazing work. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a small community, especially when you get down to work that's a little different, that's not catering, but is being inclusive of our folks and welcoming them in the door. I think about the Bay is that people don't know. It's for me, it's always been a great scene. It's always been really great. It doesn't get the spotlight that a New York or a Chicago or Los Angeles in film does, but we know, we see our people on the TV screen, on the stage, everywhere in the world. You know, big shout out to Shanaka Hodge, who just wrote Ironheart. You know, like we're everywhere. And I think there's a renaissance, and I also think because the Bay has always been leading the way in innovativeness, in telling new stories, in telling stories for brown, black, queer folks, everything. Now it's kind of like, oh, you guys are doing this? Like, we definitely been doing it. And I just think that now that everybody's kind of seeing what's happening, we're able to lead the way.
You know, when you talk about the innovativeness, and the reason why I was asking about all the people, do you all sit down and compare notes? Is there, like, for example, a new acting style You know, for example, you know, one time it was like improv and you had all these workshops and all that. I don't know, you know, in the age of AI and all this other stuff, I don't know if there's something new that we don't need, that we need to know about. Is there a new writing technique? Do you all compare notes? Is there a way in which you do theater? Like you had multimedia, you know, in your theater, in your play yesterday that we saw. So what's the note taking like amongst y'all?
Yeah, I think there's always, you know, we always link up and we're talking about each other's projects, or there'll be readings or pieces that we can share. I know Ryan and co-founders had a lot of innovative stuff in their show. I think it's just representative of, again, of how we're all like multi-hyphenates in the Bay. You know, I'm an actor, MC, DJ, someone like Ajono Sato, who did all our amazing projections, she'll work on these 20 different levels, and we're all artists and we're all pushing to make this kind of thing that's really different. So yeah, we're watching everybody's shows and we're seeing how we can bring it to that level. And again, some of us are MCs or poets, so we're gonna include that. We're gonna include music, because there's no, I don't think there's that. That's also the beauty of the Bay, that the industry isn't necessarily here, but it also gives us this freedom to try things that just haven't been done before. And I think because of that, you're seeing really beautiful pieces of work in all levels of art.
Is the goal to scale up and be in the industry, or having the freedom and scaling up where you, you know, create something new? Is that, which is the goal? And let me contextualize this a little bit.
Right.
For a long time, the Bay was ignored. So people did for self, DIY, right? And we got proud of that. And then the industry came along and it's like, well, let's put Juan on, let's put Dave on, let's put Jill on. You know, next thing you know, its imprint starts to come there. And then slowly but surely, people say, well, the goal is now to be over here in this space, a space that we don't fully control, a space that doesn't really share our values, a space that will open up and say that they want us one way, but once we're there and once mm-hmm. we're locked in, then they want to move us in the direction of decadence and commodification and all these things, et cetera, et cetera. Knowing that now, at least for a generation, you know, our generation, I'll just say, do people look at that and say, no, we can't go down this path again? We have to now do something else. We already know what it's like when you go down to LA or to New York, what it does or doesn't do. The goal is not that anymore. Or is the goal to be in those places?
I think that's the eternal question for many people. You know, I respect everyone's decision. I think actors and artists are always, especially from the Bay, because there's so much talent here. I think every generation is going to receive that offer in some other form. Like it's going to be alluring, and in some cases you go to LA and New York and you bring exactly what you have and you're able to bring that without compromising yourself. But I also think we've also been witness to,
but is that a rare thing?
I think it's a little, it's probably more rare when you can completely make it up the industry without compromising. I think the further you go up, the more people are going to want you to compromise no matter what. But I think the difference now, as opposed to like 30 years ago, is that there are viable ways to get your work out there without even having to go through the industry. And, you know, back in the days, when we think about 80s or 90s, like hip hop, for example, we said, well, that's cool, we'll just sell it out the trunk, we'll sell it ourselves. But now it's like, We have viable forms of video, of transferring things over, of you know, even though the internet's a weird place too and they try to control everything, there's ways that we can get our work and completely bypass the industry. You know, like right. we all want our music on Spotify, but there's ways for us to get our music across, and we want our stuff on TV, but you know, if we wanted to, we could really amass an incredible following on YouTube or something, or
did
some other
Ether,
space.
Issa Rae out of Stanford.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Do her own TV show on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we forget that. I don't know if we fully own those success stories that come out, because sometimes those people move on to other places. And I got to remind you, it's like, you know, when she was in Stanford, she was doing her work here. Don't credit Hollywood, credit what was up here, you know?
Yeah, Hollywood came to her. And, you know, I would like to think that she really did what she wanted to do on her own terms. So, you know, I hope there's a lot more of that. And I hope that we rely on that less and less.
So, Aslan, at the Magic Theater, rave reviews. Talk a little bit about your character or your characters.
Yeah,
you know, not as DJ One Way, but as one Amador, the actor.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I get to play a couple of characters, three to be exact, because two of them are twins. Their names are Balanque, and they're kind of like
are they twins?
They're twins. Yes, they're twins.
Okay, so I got to ask you this before you break into that.
Yep.
What did you think when you saw Sinners and you saw Michael B. Jordan doing it? Because you all came out pretty much at the same time. So so Michael B. Jordan, of course, plays both characters who are twins, and you're in a play. I didn't realize they were twins.
Yeah,
but they're twins. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, respect to Michael B. Jordan and Coogler and everybody. we did start this play writing it about a year and a half ago, so you know it's definitely was no copying on our side. just you know what it is, great thoughts are in the air, and so I get to play these twins Balanque that run this housing space, and they give Aslan a very hard time trying to get through, as the system does to a lot of folks who get out after being incarcerated. And I later play this character Tez, who's actually the father of Aslan, and I won't give away too much, but he shares a piece with them that's vital to the story as well. So
when Michael B. Jordan does his twins thing, he had to consult with twins, and he went through a whole acting process, to get it right. Now he's doing film and everything, you're doing this live on stage, you know. So did you consult with twins? Did you sit down? What was your method to bringing this to life? It's actually an incredible part of the play.
it was hard. It was hard because there's a level of a side of getting down the lines and acting. There's a level of choreography to it to really make it work. Because on its head, you might think it's a little silly, but when you, on the nights that I really, really knock it down, people are like, they're in it. And so I know I did my job. But, luckily for me, my partner, she has twin daughters. So they were very, they were helpful in the process.
So Michael B. Jordan, hired some twin brothers, right?
He
hung out with them in love. So basically you went to your partner and you went to the kids. And you soaked up their twin energy. Did you break them off? Are they SAG? Are they members of SAG now? What's the deal?
They should be. I owe them something. I owe them at least like a proper ice cream dessert or something. I do.
You need to have them come out and take a bow at you, say the inspiration.
Yep. Big shout to
the twins.
Them. Yeah. Okay. Big shout to Luma and Salma. Yep. Absolutely.
Man, because I mean, I don't want to give away the thing, but the way you're doing that, I just thought they were brothers, but now that you're saying the twins, it's even more crazy, because you're doing this live and just seeing you move from one place to the other and then completely change voice and tone and character. Like, you're two different people, like within a space of a second.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. I have to really give it up to Luis Alfaro for these two roles, because one of them shies a little more on the comedic and the other one's a little heavier. So I just want to give them a big thank you for believing in me that I could do that range and take on that challenge. So it was fun.
The fact that you're talking about parole in the system, how important is that? What do we need to glean from that? I thought that's a big, obviously it's the main part of the play, but I also think it's important that you kind of took the angles that you all did with respect to that. Made you really emphasize this is kind of like the challenge. Like, dude is trying to come up and look at, it's a lot, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. And you just realize how how the system is not really designed for us to succeed. Of course, we're human, so there's, you know, as we try to return and be part of this world, we're gonna make our mistakes here and there, but there is no leeway in that system. And they're, you know, we know the deal. It's a business. They're happy to have us back in there to cycle us right back into the space. You know, prison's big money now, and now with ICE being the most funded agency, you know, how are they gonna fill that money up? So I mean, it's so much about what's happening right now. And I think also for people who don't have friends or family that have been through that process, it's a reminder that these people are not invisible. Like, these are part of our community, and they're humans. They're not, I think the big campaign right now is dehumanizing us. The thing I hate the most is when we're talking about undocumented people, when they just call them illegals, because that's a great way for you to say disregard them and say they're not human. So I think the biggest part about Aslan, aside from this crazy system, he's a human like us. He's family. He's of the earth. He's been here. His family's been here way before so many others have, and we got to really champion that.
Have formerly incarcerated people seen the play? Are they sitting there going, man, it's hit me in a way that, thank you for doing this?
You know, I think a few have, but we're still so early in it. I'm waiting to hear more from folks there. But yeah, we're happy to share it with as many people that want to see it. And I hope that more folks that have been through that process come out and talk with us about it.
Right. And once again, Aslan, main character, but what is Aslan? Because that's something that they want to erase. I think there's a book that's banned that's based on Aslan.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's that space. It's the space of the space of that. It's taken up so much of the United States and Mexico, and it was the special space of a lot of indigenous folks and what Chicanos and Latino folks gravitate to. And yeah, just like you said, man, it's mythical in a way, because it's like it's trying to be erased right now. So people are, if since forever, since the movement started, but it's like that mythical place of returning to this space that is constantly trying to be taken away from us. So,
right. And then you got people walking around, Minutemen and on down to Proud Boys, talking about we will not be, you know, replaced. And that's the fear.
Yeah.
The fear that mythical space. One, before we let you go, let everybody know how they can see this play. You all got extended another week. Congratulations on that. So what's the deal with that?
Yeah, we initially were running until this Sunday, July 13th, Wednesday through Sunday. We've been extended for four more performances. The following week, I would check the website to get all those performances, because they're kind of specific. They're different, but I say come out this week, get excited, tell your friends about it. Go to Magic Theater. That's theater with the RE at the end, .org, and grab tickets. And also, anybody, you can include this, anybody who has any trouble getting tickets, if the money's short, please reach out to myself, reach out to Sean San Jose. We can get you a discount tickets. We can get you comp tickets. We just want to fill every single seat up. So no excuses for you not to come out. Fort Mason at San Francisco Magic Theater. We would love to have you as our guest.
Well, thank you. We will see you in the whirlwind, as they like to say. You know, Juan, who is now able to play the role of twins, you know, by day and then DJing at night. You know, man, what don't you do, man? You trying to be the new Paul Robeson?
I mean, I'm trying to, man, respect to Paul, man. If I could do a fraction of that, I'd be honored. You know?
You and Ryan Nicole are running neck and neck, because she does like 15 different things too. So,
Ryan's,
you know,
amazing.
Who's going to be the Paul Robeson of this year? You know, that's the battle right now.
Man, that would be amazing.
Let's see, you're DJing all over. You'll be at Stern Grove on opening up for Diana Ross. She just put out an album. She's acting, you know. I mean, you know, I mean, y'all are vying for it, you know.
But, you never know.
Maybe y'all have to do something together.
Yeah, you know, maybe Barry's watching, and you know, he's looking for a follow up to the Wiz or something. We'll see. I don't know, but
that would be funny.
I gotta say, Davey, before we get out, you know, it's an honor. You know, I was at KPFA for a long time, watching you do your thing, and of course, much longer. And yesterday, it was such a treat to see you and Marcus Gutierrez in the space at the same time.
Yeah.
You guys are absolute legends and two people that I've looked up to in this radio industry, doing radio. So grateful for you, man. Thank you for being there.
Thank you.
And yep. Seriously.
So some people call me like Unc or OG now, but Marcos Gutierrez is like that's like the godfather OG. That was good to see him in the space. I was like, damn, he's here? Yep. Now I know we're in the right space, you know,
because
his history is rock solid. So,
yep.
Well, good to see you, brother. We will see you in the whirlwind. Peace out.
Thank you, man.
We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We're out for now. Peace.
In the realm of the airwaves, where the truth does spin,
Hard Knock Radio takes the mic. Let the dialogue begin.
From the heart of the culture, where the beats do sway,
hip-hop, politics, and culture
rule the day.
Rockin' on your radio. Rockin' on your radio. Hard Knock rockin' on your radio.
Speaking truth to power.
Hard Knock rockin' on your radio.
to KBOO Portland.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre. A place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday.